And good evening to you. Welcome back to another Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu. Now, first, before we start with my show, I apologize for last week. I was unfortunately not here. I was in Riverside, California with the soccer team. And to give you a little quick recap of how we did, which I really don't want to because we didn't have that good of a showing out down south in Southern California. But I'll give it to you anyway. We unfortunately went 0-2 on a road trip. We played Cal Baptist University twice. First game, we lost 4-0. Second game, we lost 4-1. It obviously wasn't our best performance of the year. But to give Cal Baptist some credit, now just some, they did play very well, and they are a very strong team. They are in the PacWest Conference like us, and they're a very strong team. We came in not knowing what to expect, and basically they ran right through us. Then we came back from our road trip and played against Chaminade University from Hawaii. We played them last Thursday here at Dominican. We came out very strong. We beat a Chaminade University team 1-0, and it was a good showing for us because we came back from the road trip, played very well, and got a result. The first win of the year for our league, which felt really good, and hopefully we keep it up. We just got done with a game today in the rain, in the muddy field today at Dominican. We played Cal State Maritime, and we actually beat them 4-1. Two goals by Nuri Bonacosta, a goal by David, and another goal by me. Very good game by us. Cal State Maritime isn't that strong of a team, but we did do what we needed to do, and we beat them 4-1, which was a very positive showing for us. Our second game win in a row. You can catch us next time we play. We actually, this end of this week on Friday, we're going to Dixie State in Utah and also to Arizona to play Grand Canyon University. So we're going on quite a long road trip. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make our next week's showing show, but don't worry. I'm going to make up these two shows that I missed. I'll keep you updated on when I'm going to make those up. So let's get a quick recap of today's segment. In tonight's show, we'll first go over a big win by the SF 49ers over the big Philadelphia Eagles. Huge win for us. Puts us in first in the NFC West. I'll get into that game later. So watching this San Francisco 49er game and watching them play, there was this really, really, really bonehead move that Ronnie Brown did in the second quarter. So got me thinking of how many bonehead plays were there this week, and I came up with quite a few of just some idiotic plays out there on the football field. So I'll get into those later. And at very last, I'm going to get into a little drama between a vendor who sells beer at the New York Yankees, why he isn't allowed to work there for the next couple games. I'll keep you updated on that on this jam-packed show of the Power Hour here with DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu. Jump into our first topic. Now, this topic is one that I can talk about all week long until next Sunday, just because it is the 49ers beating the unbeatable dream team that is the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, when I saw on SportsCenter that people were calling the Philadelphia Eagles the dream team, that's when I knew that something bad was going to happen. Because when you put so much pressure on a team to do so well, when they have all this great talent and all these superstars, it really never tends to pan out like it's supposed to, and it really never, the expectations are never fulfilled ever. There, it's always the team not doing too well, choking under pressure, what have you. Now, there was too much hype behind this team even before they hit the practice field this year. I mean, we were in the lockout when they were signing all these free agents. We were saying, oh, this team's going straight to the Super Bowl automatically. But look, they're 1-3 right now. And when asked about their 1-3 record, Mike Vick in the postgame conference had this to say. He says, quote, "We all had high expectations and we still do. Don't get me wrong, it's still a long season and we just have to dig deep. We've got to dig deep," end quote. Now, they need to start digging, and they need to start digging now. And I don't know how far they can dig, because they could probably start digging and go to China for all I know, because they are in a whole world of hurt, especially in their division with the New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Washington Redskins. It's a tough division, and going 1-3 is not going to cut it. They need to step it up. I don't know. I really don't know what to tell you, Mike Vick. You need to. He's been getting hit way too much. He's been complaining to the refs, saying that the refs are never calling late hits on him because he's a mobile quarterback, what have you. Still, they have way too much talent on that team to be only 1-3. Way too much talent. Now, of course, there is plenty of time left in the season. I mean, we're only a quarter way through the year. There's so much more games to play, so many more injuries that could happen to other teams. I mean, there is a million different scenarios that could happen from now until the end of the season. So we'll just have to wait and see. But an important stat to think of is only 21 teams who've started the season 1-3 have made it to the playoffs. Only 21. Now, this is a scary stat for the Eagles. Very scary. I mean, only 21 teams. There has been a lot of teams going 1-3 and not making the playoffs. I don't know. I see Philadelphia not making the playoffs this year. I see them not living up to any type of expectation that they had. Now, the 49ers won the game 24-23. Forgot to tell you that. They won 24-23. They actually came back from a 23-3 deficit in the second half. I mean, when they were down by that much, it was really hard to watch the Niners game. I mean, I did not see them even producing more than 10 points of offense. I mean, I even told my roommate, I looked over and I said, there is no way the Niners are even coming close to scoring 23 points. But they ended up scoring 24, and we ended up winning. I mean, I didn't see them ever having a chance to come back, especially with Alex Smith at quarterback. No way are we. I mean, let's face it. Our offense is not built on coming back. Alex Smith is not going to throw 300 to 400 yards a game to come back from a 20-point deficit. It's just not going to happen. We don't have the quarterback to do it. We don't have the wide receivers to do it. We just don't have the weapons on offense to be a comeback team like that. But by some miracle, Alex Smith, Frank Gore, they led the offense to a great second half comeback. I mean, it was one for the ages. It was a lot of fun to watch. There've actually been 15 double-digit comebacks in the first 4 weeks of the NFL season. That's the most since 1989, where there was 13 in the first 4 weeks. So there have been a lot of comeback situations this year, and the losing team has come back, or the winning team is just choked way too fat. Because in my opinion, I see all these teams who are up ahead at halftime, they just start lollygagging through the game. They start going through the motions. They say, hey, we're up 20. If they score a couple touchdowns, we're still up. Like, we're not going to try to do anything cute. And that's what'll get you beat. They play prevent defense, which prevents you from winning. I mean, it happens in every sport, really. I mean, you see a soccer game. Plenty of times in a soccer game, you go 2-0 at halftime. Two-goal leads is the hardest lead to keep at halftime. As soon as the other team scores a goal, you're already in the backing up on your heels without the momentum. It's just a tough situation to be in when you start going ahead of a game like this in football by 20-plus points. And it's tough. It's tough to keep your mental capacity. It's tough to keep going through the game when you look across the sideline. You're like, oof. We're killing this team right now. What am I supposed to do? Now, the impressive part about the Niners, besides Alex Smith going 21 for 33 with 291 yards and two touchdowns, but besides that, those stats, that Alex Smith doesn't throw an interception that whole game, the Niners' defense is what held us together and what kept us together, and that's how we won, really. I mean, now, even though they gave up 23 points to the Philadelphia Eagles is a feat and a half. That is a very good stat right there. I mean, you have DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, LeSean McCoy, Mike Vick. I mean, they can run the score up fast. And they didn't. I mean, it was a perfect example of the Niners defense bending, but not breaking. We didn't give up the big plays. We tried to keep them to field goals as much as possible. Hey, the kicker missed two field goals, which helped us win the game. It was good that we bent, but didn't break. I mean, a great example of them bending, but not breaking, is Mike Vick had a really good game. He had a career high 417 yards and rushed for 75 yards. But the good thing was they kept him out of the end zone. He might have gotten all these yards on their own side of the field or during the midfield, but as soon as it got down to the 30 and the 20-yard line on our side, the defense just stood up, hold their ground, and forced some field goals, which was very nice to see. I mean, Vic was the leading rusher and the leading passer on the field for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, when he's the leading rusher, that's when you have problems, because that's when he starts getting banged up, like he always does. I mean, he hurt his throwing hand early in the first half. I mean, he's just always getting beat up because he's always moving around. People are just giving him trouble, and of course, their offensive line is doing the worst job. Mike Vick doesn't have any type of time back there. And poor Mike Vick, because you look at the New England Patriots and you look at the Indianapolis Colts, their quarterbacks literally have all day to throw back there. All day. I mean, they can just sit there, and that offensive line would just hold on to those blocks, never give them any pressure, and that's why they're so good. Poor Mike Vick, he can't even buy 2 seconds to try to find the open receiver. I mean, all he has to do, when Vick gets time, he will find the open man, and he will throw a dart to that man, and it'll give time for DeSean Jackson to use his speed down the field. It's just a messed up situation, and what didn't help was them not running the ball at all. I mean, LeSean McCoy only ran for 18 yards yesterday. I mean, this has to be a bit of concern for them, because without a running game, the defense is never going to respect that you're ever going to run it. So they're just going to sit back, play some coverage, and just go all out on Mike Vick. Just pass rush the crap out of him, because they know that they can't run. They didn't run all game. So they know he's just going to drop back, look for a receiver, and that's when you can get sacks, you can get hits, you can hurry him up, maybe get him injured, and that's why he's getting injured all the time. I mean, he's dropping back way too predictably, and it just lets the defense rush the quarterback all day long. I don't understand it. Basically, what I'm trying to say is Philadelphia needs help. They need to work on stuff, and they need to work on stuff fast. Now, the MVP for the game, for me, it was a Smith. He has the last name Smith, but it wasn't Alex Smith. Even though Alex Smith had a good game, I can't give him an MVP award. I don't think I could ever give him an MVP award. But another Smith, defensive end Justin Smith. I mean, after Frank Gore scored the go-ahead touchdown, there was still a little over 2 minutes left to play in the game. So that is ample time for the Eagles to just march down the field, kick a field goal, and win the game. That's all I kept thinking through my head. But to my surprise, all it took was, I think it was the third or fourth play of the series, a little wide receiver screen to Jeremy Maclin. And you see Justin Smith, he rushed the quarterback for about 3 to 4 yards, recognized that it was a screen, turned around, sprint his big, big old butt down, maybe like 10 yard sprint, caught up to Jeremy Maclin, who is one of the fastest receivers in the league, mind you. Caught up to this man, and he did this diving punching tackle where he dove through his left hand, punched the ball out of Jeremy Maclin's hand for a fumble. DeSean Goldson runs over, picks up the fumble. Niners get their third win of the year. I mean, it was tremendous hustle play. When you see a defensive end hustling his butt off, getting down the line, chasing wide receivers on screen plays, I mean, that's when your defense or even a team and you're looking at these big old dudes working their butt off, that must give you so much energy and so much motivation to keep going, because you see these big guys working their butt off, it's just going to make you work even harder. Props to Justin Smith. I love that man. He is one of our anchors on the defense. Keep it up, Justin. Love you, man. This has a lot to do with the coaches on the sideline. Now, it comes down to decision making during the game, and being the third come from behind loss that the Eagles have endured in a row. Now, this is their third loss in a row when they were already leading. The Eagles, I mean, they need to start making some changes. They need to be stressing now because both the Giants, New York Giants, and the Redskins are 3-1. Now, they're already in a two-game hole in the NFC East. And the NFC East is a very good division. We'll see how that pans out. And all in all, I mean, it's just good seeing the Niners win, and especially seeing the Niners win against such a good team like the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, it's good that we finished the game out, because I remember watching some games last year. We'd be beating some pretty good teams. I mean, last year, I mean, the Vikings were good. Almost should have beat them. Lost in one play at the very end of the game. I mean, we played the good teams very, very well, and just toward the end could not just pull away or get that final touchdown. And today we did, which is a good sign. Maybe Jim Harbaugh is teaching these guys how to mature and grow up. Let's hope to see that. Now, the Niners are atop the NFC West right now. They're up two games. And, I mean, if they make it to the playoffs, look out. You never know. I see them making the playoffs, and they could do damage. I mean, the NFC West is not a strong schedule. I could see us winning a lot of games this year, especially against the teams in the NFC West. We'll see it works. Again, it's only quarter way through the season. Can't wait for the rest of the NFL year. Well, that's our first segment of the Power Hour here at DominicanRadio.dominican.edu. Next up, I will give you a lowdown on all the bozo plays and the bonehead moves that I noticed this weekend. And trust me, there are quite a few pretty bonehead plays. It'll be a good laugh. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned. Power Hour, DJ Sam I Am, radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to the Power Hour with DJ Sam. I am here at the one, the only radio.dominican.edu. Before I jump into our next segment, I want to give you a little update on Monday Night Football. It is currently fourth quarter, about 12 minutes, 15 seconds left in the fourth quarter. It's the Indianapolis Colts at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's a 17-17 game right now. Very close games. Josh Freeman right now already has 269 yards with a TD, and rookie Curtis Painter with his first start of his NFL career is 11 for 24, 265 yards passing with two touchdown passes. Very impressed with Curtis Painter. Not bad. The ball is currently on the Tampa Bay 25-yard line, and the Colts have the ball right now. So there's a quick little Monday night update in the middle of the power hour at radio.dominican.edu. Now, our next segment that I'd like to talk about. Now, this is a little fun topic to talk about. There were some really idiotic plays this weekend, and I don't know if you caught him, but I caught him, and I'm going to talk about him because, I mean, some of these plays, they costed the team a win. I mean, others meant nothing to the outcome, but to see these plays happen, it really made me question the intelligence of these football players. I mean, there were some plays where I just sat there and I was just like, what is this guy thinking? Like, what are you doing? I mean, just absolutely bewildered. Wasn't even expecting to see this crazy of an outcome to some of these games. So first, we'll stay with this Eagle and 49er kind of theme just because the 49ers won and they're first in the NFC West. Just a little side note there if I didn't mention that already. Now, there was a play, second quarter of the game, Ronnie Brown. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles have the ball inside the 5-yard line toward the end of the first half, and he's about to get tackled. There was a run up the middle. Ronnie Brown is a backup to LeSean McCoy. They give Ronnie Brown the ball. He runs up the middle, and as he's getting wrapped up and tackled, he's getting tangled up. I don't even know what he was thinking because I don't even know what happened. I saw it and I had to watch it a couple more times after that just to make sure that he actually tried to do this. He winds up and tries to throw the ball. Now, this is a running back and he's trying to throw the ball. It didn't even look like he was laddering the ball. He actually wound up, put the ball behind his ear like he was Mike Vick, and he's trying to throw the ball. I mean, they were up 20. Or no, they weren't up that much at the time, but they're still winning at the time. I mean, what is this guy doing? Just run up the middle. You're inside the 5-yard line. How does that come across to your mind saying, oh, this will be a good idea. Let me try to throw this across the field because I know this will work. I mean, how idiotic do you have to be? I mean, if all the Eagles had to do was just get a field goal, get some points out of that, and look, the outcome of the game is completely different. They win by 2 points instead of the Niners winning by one. That is what a costly mental error does to a team. It just drains you when you look at some players like Ronnie Brown and just saying, man, I'm working my butt off out here, and you're doing these stupid plays, not even thinking about anything. Now, what Ronnie Brown had to say after the game was, quote, obviously, as a professional, no matter what the play is, you have to make a good decision. I obviously have to take ownership and make a better decision. I made a bad decision with the ball, and that's what it boils down to. End quote. Very true, Ronnie Brown. Good insight there. Like, how are you attempting to lateral the ball on a run that was only designed to get 4 yards? All they probably told Ronnie Brown in the huddle was, Ronnie, can you get us 4 yards, get a touchdown? That's all we need. Even if Brown made this lateral play and they scored, it still would have been a really dumb play. I mean, who is calling a lateral play inside the 5-yard lines? So it would either be Ronnie Brown's fault, but if it worked, it would have been the coach's fault because what kind of play call are you doing inside the 5-yard line? Now, because the reason why the Eagles signed you was because you are a powerful runner and they need those on short runs. If you saw last week, Philadelphia Eagles did absolutely horrific on short yard situations. They could not gain a yard to save their life because they have these really small, quick players like DeSean Jackson and LeSean McCoy. They're just small. They're not really powerful. I mean, they're powerful. They're football players. They have to be powerful. But compared to like a LeGarrette Blount or a or an Joseph Addai, or just a Frank Gore, just someone who is a power rusher who will throw his head down. Let's say Marion Barber, who will literally tackle you as an offensive player. They that's why they got Ronnie Brown, was because of these situations. And to see him trying to throw the ball in these kind of situations is beyond me. It went way over my head. I don't know what's happening. I just don't want to be Ronnie Brown today at practice, because you know all of his teammates are just giving him the most crap. The coach is probably giving him an earful. I just, thank God I'm not Ronnie Brown. Let's throw it to the next time, the next bozo play. It happened yesterday also, and it was in the Pittsburgh Steelers game against the Houston Texans. Now, this is a huge AFC battle where the Texans are trying to solidify themselves as a top team in the AFC. They've really come up short the past couple years. They've seemed kind of good, but end of the year 8-8, which isn't good enough for them, and definitely not good enough for the AFC to get in the playoffs. So what they're trying to do is trying to solidify them, and what better way is to play the team who represented the AFC in last year's Super Bowl. So what happened? Well, Texans won, but that's beyond what I was about to talk about. It was an attempted field goal with time expiring at half by the Steelers, and this was for the Steelers to cut the lead to 7. It was a 10-0 game. Texans were winning. Time running out, second half. The Texans block the field goal, and as the ball's rolling on the ground behind the kicker and holder, Jonathan Joseph, the defensive back for Houston Texans, is there to pick up the ball, and he's off and running. He can basically walk in the end zone at this point as soon as he has the ball. There's really no one out there who can catch up to him. Before Jonathan Joseph could get to the end zone, here comes Daniel Manning, another Houston Texan. He's trailing Joseph, and he spots the kicker and just absolutely obliterates the kicker from behind. Just a blatant block in the back, blatant, and just absolutely annihilates his poor kicker, thinking that the kicker was just going to all of a sudden gain some momentum, beat Jonathan Joseph is 10 yards ahead of this kicker right now. There is no way a kicker is ever catching Jonathan Joseph or any other field player for that matter. I mean, he's a kicker. Now, first off, I have a lot of problems with this. And so, first off, it's Jonathan Joseph. He picked up the ball with a 5 to 10 yard gap between him and the next Steeler player. Now, Joseph will probably be able to outrun most, if not all, of the Steelers who are on the kicking team. Now, the kicking team, it consists of offensive linemen. You have the kicker, you have the holder, and then you might have some tight ends, some bigger dudes. So it's all just big, huge dudes trying to block for the kicker. Now, why would you block someone in the back when you know your teammate's in the clear? I mean, it was really obvious that Jonathan Joseph was going to score this touchdown. And the worst part about it is that Manning actually blocked the kicker. I mean, the kicker. Let's try to think of the last time. Okay, let's play a game. Let's try and think of the last time you were watching a football game and you saw a kicker make a tackle. Don't worry, I'll wait. Exactly. Never. You have never seen it. I've never seen it. If you've seen it, send me the link to the video, because I'd love to see it. I could only see it to believe it, because kickers are one of the most unathletic people next to pitchers in any type of sport, period. A kicker can barely run 45 yards without almost tearing his hamstring, to be honest. I mean, they can't do any type of physical activity whatsoever. That's why they're kickers. All they do is just kick a ball. I mean, even if the kicker is in front of the guy, let alone 5-10 yards behind him, I mean, I can bet you a lot of money that kicker is not coming close to making that tackle. I mean, not even close to making that tackle. Thank God for the Texans, because the play didn't hurt them. They ended up winning the game against the Steelers. But that, I mean, for the Texans, this is a play that really has plagued them the last couple years. I mean, they were in a lot of games last year against these really good AFC teams, but stupid mental errors, bonehead plays like this can cost you a game. And that's 7 points right down the drain. Steelers could have easily come back from that, come back second half, have some momentum. Totally different game after that. If Jonathan Joseph scores that touchdown and Daniel Manning just, all Daniel Manning had to do was just sit down in crisscross applesauce and just watch Jonathan Joseph walk in the end zone, because he was in the clear. I don't understand what Daniel Manning was thinking. Who knows? It's just getting me all hyped up now. So let's go to the next bonehead play that I saw. It was, now if you've been watching SportsCenter today, you've probably seen this a couple times. It's the Victor Cruz fumble play from the New York Giants. They were playing the Arizona Cardinals yesterday, and the Giants were playing, it was 3 minutes left in the game to play, and the Giants were losing by three. So they're marching down the field, trying to make a comeback, and Victor Cruz makes a catch. He sprints for about 10 yards, where he then falls to the ground by himself without anyone touching him. He makes a little juke. And you know how when players go down and they're injured, they just fall to the ground? It was kind of like that. He didn't get injured, but he just fell. No one touched him. No one was in 3 to 4 yards of him. Fell. No one touched him. He dropped the ball on the ground as he rose from the turf. Should be a fumble, right? If no one marks him down a contact, no one tackled him. No one pushed him. No one tripped him. This isn't college football. If you go down and no one touched you, you're still in play, big boy. That should have been a fumble. The ruling was that Cruz gave himself up like a sliding quarterback. Now, the ruling is that when you go down as a runner and you blatantly stop progressing and kind of basically give up, that's when the play is dead. Stupid rule. I don't know why it's there. To me, it was an absolutely horrible call. Luckily for Victor Cruz, the ref saved him. But in reality, he made a huge, huge, huge mistake. I mean, that could have easily cost the game for the Giants. I mean, that was the game for the Giants, because the next play, after they called it a no fumble, they threw a touchdown pass right to Hakeem Nicks, Eli Manning to Hakeem Nicks for the win. I mean, that's got to be heart-wrenching for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, it looked like a fumble. Everyone on the field thought it was a fumble. I thought it was a fumble. I feel like everyone in the stands thought it was a fumble. I mean, when have you ever heard a whistle blow after a receiver falls to the ground and isn't touched? Defenders always go over and slap a hand on the down carrier. Why should Cruz get the benefit of the doubt? Because he got up like a fool and nonchalantly just dropped the ball? Like, I don't know, that's stupid. It's absurd to me. I mean, if we're going to let guys dive head first and then act like they're down, I mean, we might as well outlaw tackling. I mean, this is called tackle football. You're supposed to get tackled. That's how you're down from the ground. You can't just fall to the ground because you're about to get tackled and think that it's okay. Now, the Cardinals coach, Ken Whisenhunt, was asked about the play after the game. But he did a really good thing. He refused to criticize any of the officials for the call. He said, quote, "It shouldn't have come down to that play." He told reporters, "This is a great..." So he basically just said it shouldn't have come down to that play. I mean, this is a great response by the coach. He's not blaming the game that is really 3 to 3.5, sometimes longer, a game, and he's not going to blame it on one stupid play. I mean, it was Arizona's fault that they gave up a lead, and all the events that led up to this was what made you lose the game. Now, Ken Whisenhunt has a very good head on his shoulders, and in my opinion, is one of my favorite coaches in the NFL. I like his style, and you can tell he's just a mature coach. He's not going to blame stuff that happened. He's going to take full responsibility of his team and his team's actions. I'm glad to see that. Now, just to recap all these bonehead plays, I just want to throw this in. I really don't understand how someone could be making so much money and could spend so much time on these different scenarios in practice every single day. This is what they do. This is their job. Every single day, wake up, go to sleep, sleep, eat, drink, football. And how are these players still making all these just stupid and bozo decisions on the field? I mean, I understand everyone makes mistakes. And believe me, I know, I damn well know that I make mistakes on the soccer field as well. Everyone does. But it's really, it's those mental mistakes when you can just tell you're looking at these players and they are not thinking at all on the field. That's what gets under my skin. It's just fundamental stuff. I mean, I feel like they should have learned this stuff in Pop Warner. When you're inside the 5-yard line, you're not going to lateral the ball. You're going to run straight up the middle, try to get the touchdown. I just hope I'm not I'm just glad that, again, I'm not any of these guys later at practice, because you know they're just getting an earful from coaches, staff, probably family, and definitely coaches. I already said that. So we'll take a real quick break here. We're running out of time, but we'll take a real quick break. I want to talk about, when we get back from the break, I want to talk about the New York Yankees and what happened to their beer vendor. So don't stay anywhere. Keep it locked on the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu. His temple was his cage. He looked upon his work, and he had it his way. Yeah, I will not be chained, my friend, he paid. Oh, ooh, my work was changed. Glad to have you back on the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu. Now, our last little segment of the show before I run out of time. So I saw this was from Yahoo Sports, and it was a little paragraph on this New York Yankees vendor. Now he sells beer at the New York Yankee Stadium. It's a poor 53-year-old man. His name is Steve Lazarus, and it happened about a week ago when they had a doubleheader against the Boston Red Sox. Now I just want to bring this up just because I thought it was kind of alarming on how this whole situation panned out at the end. Now the report from Yahoo Sports said that the vendor Steve Lazarus harassed opposing pitcher Alfredo Aceves between the two doubleheader games. Lazarus was with some coworkers near a freight elevator on the terrace level. He heard clickety-clacking of the cleats walking down, so knew that there was a player walking down. And since Lazarus has been vending since he was 19 years old, that's 35 years of vending at the at the New York Yankees. So, you know, he knows a little bit about some personnel and who's on whose team, especially if it's the Boston Red Sox, because you know that big rivalry between the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if you know that rivalry, but yeah, it's a pretty big rivalry. So what apparently happened was this Steve Lazarus, he goes up to the pitcher and just like a little jackass move, he just goes, "Hey man, you can't come in here. You need your ID. Do you have your ID?" And according to the Yahoo Sports, it was a playful manner, chuckling as he's saying it. And the pitcher responds, "I got your ID right here," as he grabs his crotch and shows Lazarus's crotch. Now, a supervisor called Lazarus during the game, telling that he was harassing an opposing player. And really, all that could come out of Steve's mouth was, "Are you kidding me?" His badge was taken and escorted out of the stadium like a quote-unquote common criminal. All Steve just kept saying was, "Are you kidding? Are you kidding?" Now, understanding that the Yankee security is probably just on high alert because they're playing the Boston Red Sox. It's toward the end of the year. There's a lot of heated rivalry going on, and they just want to take extra precaution but because of the hostility between the two teams. But believe me, there are plenty of things worse to be worried about than this silly little incident that happened. I mean, I go to plenty Giants games, and when they play the Dodgers, you need to bring some earphones for little kids, because there are some things said that, oof, it gets real dirty out there, and the verbs that people use and the adjectives that they call these Dodger guys, oof, it gets ugly. And I mean, asking for an ID in a playful manner should have just been laughed off, joked about later, just, yeah, that was kind of funny. Like, I mean, in my eyes, I thought it was the Boston pitcher, Alfredo Acevez, who should have been the one getting in trouble for his response. I mean, how immature are you just grabbing your crotch and saying, "Yeah, your ID's right here, bro"? Like, I think you should be setting a better example to kids about what the things that come out of this pitcher's mouth. I mean, you know, they look up way more to a professional pitcher than a guy who walks up stairs for every day of his life selling beer. I mean, grabbing your crotch and saying your ID is right here, that's a very immature thing to do, and I don't know why it didn't get unnoticed. I don't know why Steve Lazarus got in trouble. I would have got pissed at Alfredo Acevez. I thought that was very, very, very immature of him. I mean, really, he was just trying to enjoy his day. I mean, if I had to walk up and down those stadium stairs for literally 35 years of my life, I would love to try and have some fun with the players. I'd love to start talking smack to them, give them a little joke here and there. I think it would be funny. I thought it should have been laughed off like it was nothing, but it wasn't. Poor Steve Lazarus. I hope you're doing better, man. Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time here at the Power Hour. I had a great time with you guys, and unfortunately, you can't catch me next week because, like I said, I'm going to be in Utah, and I'm going to be in Arizona for a soccer tournament, or for a couple soccer games. We'll play Dixie State and Grand Canyon University this weekend. So next week's show will be canceled, but I will reschedule the two shows that I missed later this month, and that's it. Well, if I enjoy the show, this is DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu. You just got through a Power Hour.